Orange Direct.
Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. I am your host, Yada, and today, rather than merely presenting the news, I'm going to try to explain why these things are happening. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through His Torah, which means teaching, not law, and by way of His covenant. If you're rational, if you're open to the truth, this will be the best part of today's program. Our phone number, should you want to engage in this discussion, question, criticize, or affirm something I have to say, is 877-300-7645. There's a couple of things in the SRN news that I would like to comment on. The first of those is Ryan's pledge at the Republican convention to save Medicare, to save Social Security. You know, to have a strong national defense and fix the deficit. It's impossible. It is absolutely impossible. Medicare and Social Security collectively are the two biggest items in the federal budget. They are both Ponzi schemes. When you add that to defense, where America spends more than the rest of the world combined, collectively you have about 75% of the total federal spending problem. It is impossible for America to continue to have a Medicare program, which is a Ponzi scheme, a Social Security program, another Ponzi scheme, where parents make their children pay for their personal indulgences, and a strong national defense, which actually would be stronger if we were to cut it 90%, but left as it is, those three things make it impossible for us to have a balanced federal budget to reduce the deficit over any period of time. So when a politician says you can have it all, they're hoping that they're talking to people who are ignorant and irrational. It is not possible. Then the next item was regarding the fact that the Chancellor of Germany is telling the Chinese that Euro debt is good for you. Well, it isn't good for China, and China knows it, but we're in a time period where the only country that seems to be able to acquire debt, the economic pedophilia of the West, where we collectively are indulging ourselves and passing the burden on to our children, is China. China's kind of an interesting blend. The government is communist, socialist, secular humanism. And yet the economic scenario that they have deployed is free enterprise. While America and Europe are becoming more collectivized, more controlled in terms of the economy, more socialistic in terms of the employee relations with business, devastatingly affected by government malfeasance in the West and therefore are shrinking, economic growth is happening all over China because they have gone in the opposite direction. And that is why China is able to buy this Western and American debt. It's not good for China. It's not good for Europe. It's not good for America. And what happens is that when you engage in deficit spending, whoever is the party providing the loan comes to own you. The same thing is true with the deficit of trade. That is why the large commercial sales, the Airbus jets, were purchased. When you have a deficit of trade, the only thing that can happen is for the company, the country, to end up owning you. It's why China now owns the Port of Los Angeles, the Port of San Francisco, why they own most of America's airplane manufacturing businesses at this point. And the list goes on and on. One of the things that is, of course, one of the great myths is that this current administration wants to shift our military to the Pacific so that we can oppose China. Why would we want to do that? They own us. Why would China want to attack the United States when they own the United States? So many myths have come out of Washington. Speaking of myths, I would like to turn our attention back to the world where our military is engaged in a losing battle because of the myth that we are fighting Al-Qaeda, the myth that we are fighting the Taliban, the myth that we are somehow making a difference in keeping America free because of our involvement over there. Well, again today, the NATO-led international force in Afghanistan says that an Afghan in an army uniform, this is so weird, this is the new way of posing this, and it's universal in the media. Rather than saying that an Afghan National Army soldier shot and killed a NATO soldier, they now said that they just, and they all write it the same way, which tells you that there is definitely collusion going on. There is a conspiracy to misinform. It says an Afghan in an army uniform has killed three of its soldiers, the latest in a series of so-called green-on-blue attacks. The NATO forces wear blue. The Afghans wear green. That's why it's called a green-on-blue attack. This attack took place in the southern Afghan province. Australia's military has confirmed that its soldiers died in the incident, but did not say how many. Some 45 coalition troops have died in more than 30 such attacks this year alone. And it just continues every day, the drumbeat. We give another Afghani soldier a gun, and they use that gun, discharge it, killing Americans, in this case, Australians. How in the world is that going to work? I mean, when does the American people and its government say, this isn't going to work? There is no reason to squander more money and more lives over here. There is no hope. And leave. When are we going to admit the obvious? Well, it's a rationale like U.S. judge, military judge in San Juan, that tells you that the obvious always escapes those empowered in this country. This dateline San Juan, Puerto Rico, it is from the AP. A U.S. military judge agreed Monday to postpone the next court hearing at Guantanamo Bay Prison for five men charged in the September 11 attacks to avoid conflict with the Muslim holy period of Ramadan, a period when devout Muslims fast during the day and pray during the night. What this idiot of a judge couldn't piece together is that the only reason that those men were there is because they were Muslims. The only reason that 9/11 occurred is because Islam motivated the murderers. And now he's making an accommodation for Islam. The men who are in that prison are simply the symptoms. They are the victims of Islam. The enemy is Islam, Judge. Don't accommodate Islam. Ramadan is the time, and Muhammad was really stupid, and his God wasn't any smarter. So you can't say really Ramadan is the time that the Quran was first revealed, because all we got when the Quran was first revealed is Muhammad went off to a cave. He was practicing pagan religious rites. He was an outcast from his community, and so he went out to be a pagan. And worship the dark spirits of the pagan gods of Arabia. And so he went into a dark cave, and at night, and he was doing all sorts of pagan religious things. And that's when a dark spirit met with him and beat the living tar out of him. He knew it was a demonic experience. He told his wife when the first verses of the so-called Quran were revealed that it was as a result of demon possession. So he knew exactly what had happened. And his revelation at the time was stupid beyond belief. The order from the dark spirit was read. And he said, I don't know how to read. He was illiterate. Read. And then he says, you know, but I don't know how to read. And then they beaten up again, and he says, read, that the pen has written that man was created through a coagulated drop of blood. I mean, stupid beyond belief. So Ramadan is supposedly recognizing when this pagan received a demonic inspiration in a dark cave that was utterly and completely senseless. Even the first word, which was Kara, for Quran, recite, was Hebrew, and the Quran claims to be perfect Arabic. Its big claim to fame is that unlike all those Hebrew scriptures, no, this was written in pure Arabic, given to an illiterate man, and it is actually Hebrew. Well, if that were not enough, Muhammad then decided that, you know, that this intercalendary month, so that the lunar month is perfectly synced with the solar year, therefore the, you know, some, a month that is the beginning of the year, like Abib in the Hebrew scriptural calendar, stays at its present location at the year. That's how the rest of the world managed time. But Muhammad wasn't very smart. His God wasn't any smarter. So what happened is Muhammad said, no, that intercalendar month where you add a month every two or three years to keep the lunar calendar synced with the solar calendar, that's a satanic thing. That causes the months to wander aimlessly around the year. We want a fixed year, so we're only going to have 12 lunar months. Well, when you have 12 lunar months, and you realize that a month is 29 and a lunar month is 29 and a half days long, they're going to meander all over the year. And so Ramadan can happen at any time during the year, all as a result of the stupidity of Islam. There are so many reasons to reject Islam. And yet Muslims think it is a perfect book from their God. Now, of course, this would make it difficult. It was the justification for the accused to participate in their defense, said Cornell, a lawyer for Ali Abd al-Aziz Ali. It is a very difficult to pay attention sometimes to intricate legal proceedings when you haven't had any sleep and you haven't had any food, Cornell said. These men are not educated. They're not going to follow intricate legal proceedings. They won't even acknowledge those proceedings. These men are guided by Sharia law. They're guided by Islam. That's all they know. The rest of this is an absolute facade, Mr. Attorney and Mr. Judge. We'll return to this story and then move on to another. When we return to Shattering Myths after the break, I am Yada, your host, and we would encourage you to participate in this conversation. Good morning and back. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada, 877-300-7645. The judge in this case, another Neanderthal, probably I'm slandering Neanderthals here, so that's not fair, but the nincompoop who made this ruling is Army Colonel James Pohl. He, however, did deny a defense request not to hold any future hearings in the case on Friday. So he's going to honor Ramadan, but he's not going to honor the Muslim holy day of Friday where the same things occur. So no, I'm going to be a hypocrite here. I'm going to honor your religious fast that marks the time of the year that Muhammad received his Quran. And by the way, some years it even happens twice that during the time of year that Muhammad received his Quran, because if you observe it in early January, you're going to have to observe it again in December, because that's the difference between the lunar and solar year. And I'm going to forget about the fact that this is celebrating the most idiotic book, the most mean-spirited, the most demonic book ever conceived, maybe the worst book ever written. I'm going to forget about that, but I'm going to give you a pass during Ramadan, which is when Muslims are most prone to kill. But as for your Friday day of prayers, the hell with it, you're going to show right up here. But we're going to honor our country's celebration of the sun god on Sunday. I am sure it's what Colonel James Pohl decided. The judge did not explain his decisions and his brief ruling. Of course, how could you explain that? The defendants include Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who has told authorities that he masterminded the plot and all five could get the death penalty if convicted. Yeah, we waterboarded him. We tortured him. We did what the Constitution says we cannot do, but we did it outside the United States. So therefore, did we violate the Constitution when we waterboarded him and tortured him outside of the country? I'll let you decide that. As for confessions under torture, you can decide the validity of those. As for whether Muslims tell the truth or would a Muslim take credit for something that good Muslims think was wonderful, 9/11, or would they would Muslims be prone to lie? Not difficult decisions here. The reality is Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was not the mastermind of 9/11, and everybody that has done 5 minutes of research on this topic knows that Ramzi Youssef was the mastermind of 9/11. They come from different parts of the world. Ramzi Youssef was living in the Philippines at the time. He wrote a detailed account of the 9/11 plot some 5 years before it happened. His account, his planning, was found during his trial as he was put on trial for attempting to kill the Catholic Pope and for coming up with the scheme to put liquid explosives on airplanes in carry-on baggage and put them over the wings and therefore the fuel tanks. All of that was discovered. He was the one who came up with Muslims going to flight schools in America, learning how to not take off and not land, but fly an airplane already in flight, which is not much of an obstacle to do, and to fly planes into the specific buildings they flew them into. His list included each of the buildings that was victimized by 9/11 and others that were also part of the plan. So even in this, America can't tell the truth. We now turn our attention to Pakistan. From behind the steel bars of his jail cell, there are two stories. These are related stories. We're going to hear the first from the man's point of view. We're going to hear the second from the woman's point of view. These are different families here. So one will tell you the view from the woman's side, another from the man's side, but they are separate incidences. So from behind, this is from CNN, the steel bars of his jail cell, Mohammed Ismail described with uncanny ease how he shot and killed his wife, how he murdered his mother-in-law and his sister-in-law. Quote, "The first shot hit the side of her body," Ismail said. "I left her there and I went next door and I killed my wife's mother and my wife's sister. I made sure they were all dead. Then I locked the door and I left the house," end quote. Now, the reason he's saying all this is that in Pakistan, that's not a crime. He will be exonerated. Without any apparent regret, Ismail, the name is should be hauntingly familiar to you, when Abraham and Sarah decided that they would somehow create a heir for the covenant that Yah was talking about, by having a child through Hagar, Sarah's servant, Ishmael was born. And we'll discuss what Yahweh had to say about Ishmael and how that influences what we see today as Islam after the break. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. If you wish to call this program, our number is 877-300-7645. I was talking to Scott during the break, and for those who might say, oh my goodness, we're going to go and tell another honor-killing story in Islam, and not one, but two, one from a man's point of view, the other from the woman's point of view. Yes, we are. And we're going to do it for two reasons. The first of those reasons is by telling you this story. I want you to think. And the first thing I want you to think about is, Yes, there are events in the free world where husbands kill their wives, where wives kill their husbands. But when they do so, there's always a shame associated with it. They all run from it. They try to hide it. They'll do everything to deny it. They know that what they have done is wrong. Now imagine a culture where honor killings are pervasive, where killing actually is an honorable thing to do, where you're an outcast in the culture if you don't kill, as opposed to an outcast if you do kill. Imagine a culture whose religion has upended its morality that massively. And then imagine going from doing something awful and feeling awful about it to doing something awful and feeling wonderful about it, bragging about it, being proud of it. That is the level of corruption that Islam creates. That is how toxic its poison is. And the more that this is reinforced in this program, since so few are willing to share this with you, the better position you will be in to defend yourself from being deceived. And that's the second point I wanted to make. Whether it is patriotism or politics, whether it is religion or military schemes, if I were to share with you one absolute proof that your trust in your military, your trust in your country, your trust in your favorite political party, your trust in your religion was misguided, that it was wrongly placed, that you will be absolutely disappointed by that, that it's not going to perform as promised, that rather than guiding you to the truth, it is misleading you. Rather than making you more free, it is making you less free. If I were to provide one irrefutable proof that that is the case, although rationally it should be enough for everyone, in reality it isn't enough for anyone. And that is because patriotism and politics, religion and militarism are so ingrained in our society that for someone to be willing to put their head above the crowd, to walk against the flow, it takes many proofs. The only way to protect you from being beguiled by politics and patriotism, religion and militarism, is to prove over and over again that these things are not worthy of your trust, that they will fail you, and that there is only one who can be trusted. And that one asks you to walk away from human institutions because they all beguile. None of them are trustworthy. So we are going to continue to reinforce this in the first half of the program so that eventually the amount of evidence that Islam is rotten to the core, that Christianity is wrong and unreliable, as is Judaism, as is socialist secular humanism, as are both political parties, as is this notion that your military is providing your freedom. If we continue to hammer away at these things and continue to provide you with the information you need to understand the truth, then you will be inoculated from propaganda, from being deceived. And when that happens, you will be open to the truth. You'll be open to choosing to rely on Yahweh instead. And he will be open to reaching out to you. So this man said, I am proud of what I did. That is why I turned myself over to the police. You see, he went there. He knew that there would be no consequence for what he did because he's a Muslim. He did this in Pakistan. Ishmael's confession to the triple murder took place in February in a village in central Pakistan, and is a rare and chilling first-hand account of the so-called honor killing, the murder of women who usually are accused of dishonoring their families by being unfaithful or being disobedient. Actually, the commentary is all over the media. This is not the least bit rare. Maybe rare for this particular journalist because he's never paid attention to it before. But it is pervasive. The only unique thing about honor killings in Islamic countries is there's no free press there. So getting a story out of those countries is a challenge. We talked about Ishmael, that's this man's name, at the end of the last segment, when Abraham asked Yahweh if Ishmael could be the heir to the covenant? Yahweh responded, absolutely not. No. And Yahweh sent him off, not to die, but he sent him off with provisions. And he said of Ishmael and his descendants, today's Muslims, all Muslims, because of what Muhammad said, because of the Quran's corruptions, believe that they and their religion are descendant from Ishmael. Of Ishmael, Yahweh told his mother that he will be a wild ass of a man, that his hand will be raised against his brother, and his brother's hand will be raised against him, and he will live in hostility with the whole world. When you see the wild ass behavior that existed here in this honor killing, and so many thousands of it all around the Islamic world, when you see them raising their hand against their own, killing each other with suicide bombs, doing it routinely, Muslims killing Sunni Muslims in Syria, for example, killing Shia Muslims, and Shia Muslims killing Sunni Muslims by the hundreds of thousands. When you see them rise up against the whole world as they are doing, you see prophecy being fulfilled before your eyes. What was written 3,500 years ago is like reading today's newspaper. Ishmael accused his wife of 8 months of flirting. That was her. The reason that that she was killed is because he thought she was flirting with other men and that she didn't spend all of her time at home. He killed her because, quote, my wife never made me happy. Let me give you a clue there, Ishmael. Because you're a Muslim, you will never be happy. Had nothing to do with your wife. It had all to do with your religion. Said the 20-year-old who played the drums in a traditional Pakistani wedding band before his arrest. She never took care of me. So I killed her and her sister and her mother. Yes, Scott?
So insecurity is a reason to kill. That you see your girlfriend flirting. Any issue you have to that, one, lack of trust there.
Correct.
But
mm-hmm.
It's an insecurity.
It's a boy, does it ever. You know, Muhammad was out in that, since we spoke of Ramadan, he was out in that cave because he was rejected by his community. He was insecure. His insecurity led to Islam, the most vicious religion ever conceived by man. Insecurity has led to the deaths of hundreds of millions of people as a direct result of this religion. And yes, it was Ishmael's insecurity. As a Muslim, he got it from his prophet. He inherited it from his wannabe God. Satan was insecure. Satan lashed out, wanted to be greater than God. What all insecure people do is they try to put others down. They try to stifle others. So they're of this conception that if they condemn good people, if they step on top of them, that they somehow will rise above them. That is what an insecure person does. It's the most menacing trait amongst both humankind and above among the demons. It is insecurity. That is what caused this murder. It is the impetus behind Islam. Without insecurity, Islam does not exist. If you look at Muslims today as they chant Allahu Akbar and lash out and kill viciously, when Muslims attack and kill people because their Quran was burned, if you do not see insecurity, then you don't know the trait. When you see arrogance and pride, what you're actually seeing is insecurity. That's how insecurity masks itself. She never took care of me, so I killed her. The Human Rights Commission of Pakistan reported 1,000 women were killed in the name of honor in Pakistan just in this past year, an increase of more than 100 from 2010. And that's those that they know about. For the most part, they're not reported. It's not a crime. Rights groups blame an increase in honor murders partly on what they call an ineffective justice system in Pakistan, and too often allows the killers to go unpunished. always allows the killers to go unpunished. And it's not the ineffective justice system. It's what's behind the justice system. The justice system is Sharia. What is Sharia based on? Muhammad's words and deeds. How just was Muhammad? He was a pedophile. He was a rapist. He was incestuous. He was a sexual pervert. He's a mass murderer. He's the guy that said it's okay to kill your wife. He was sadistic. He was a slave trader. He was a kidnapper. He was amongst the most vile men who ever lived. Sharia law is based upon his words and deeds exclusively. The problem is Islam. The justice system is a symptom. Honor killings are a symptom. It's amazing that rights groups can't get their facts right. Despite his videotaped confession to CNN and earlier confession to police, prosecutors say that Ishmael will soon be a free man. You see, the relatives of the women that he killed, because women aren't worth anything, will simply receive a blood donation for the killing of the mother-in-law, the sister-in-law, and of this man's wife. Rights groups complain, this article continues, that in patriarchal societies like Pakistan — Pakistan is not a patriarchal society, it is a religious society. Pakistan exists exclusively because Muslims in India were not willing to coexist with Hindus in India, and they demanded to have their own pure Islamic country. It's not a patriarchal society, it is a purely Islamic society. Come on, women's rights groups, get your facts right. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back after the break. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. This is the final segment of our news hour today. It's an interesting insight here, since the women's rights groups and the human rights groups seem to be clueless as to why these honor killings are taking place. Let me share a couple of stories that come from the Islamic Hadith. Early in Muhammad's tenure as the spokesperson for Ar-Rahman — yes, he was originally the spokesperson for Ar-Rahman, the God's name didn't change to Allah until Muhammad was booted out of Mecca in shame, and the reason that it wasn't originally Allah is because if he was speaking on behalf of Allah in Mecca, where there was a pagan rock shrine to rock gods, and Allah was simply the largest rock in the rock garden, then that rock would have been expected to do something to verify that that he had chosen Muhammad to be his spokes rock. And, roll over, I don't know, crack up, I don't know what rocks do, but since Muhammad knew that he couldn't coax the rock to do anything, he used the god of the Yemenite pagans, Ar-Rahman. Well, as he then began to say that he was the spokesperson for this god, with a miserable, disgusting life and with Quranic revelations that were nothing but regurgitated paganism, there were a couple of informed people who served as the media for the local community. This was a completely illiterate community. In fact, written Arabic did not exist at the time that Muhammad allegedly recited the Quran. And so it was a completely illiterate society. And so poets were the means of serving as news, as being media. And so two women, both informed, having heard what Muhammad had claimed, exposed why it was untrue. And it doesn't take a genius to do it. What Muhammad said was gobbledygook, and it was nothing but regurgitated paganism in his initial surahs. So they proved that Muhammad should not be trusted, and that it would be a grave consequence to believe him, to follow him, that people would bring ruin on themselves to follow such a false prophet. And so Muhammad, rather than debating them, Muhammad, rather than telling his people, well, you really shouldn't trust that person because this, that, and the other thing, being an insecure individual, rather than debating the message, told his goons to go out and kill both of these two women. And so the men said, you know, it's going to be easier for us to kill them if we deceive them and pretend to be their friend as opposed to their foe. Muhammad said, oh, feel free to lie and deceive them. Why would you trust a prophet who says it's okay to lie? If you're a Muslim? Then they came back and they said, you know, we did as you said. We went and killed these two women, but you know they had young children. The young children were in bed with them. One was even feeding on a breast. Shouldn't we feel some guilt in having killed these two young women who were taking care of their children? No, don't feel any compulsions. No more important to Allah than two goats butting heads. Why would you trust a prophet who thinks that the best way to deal with someone who is critical of what you say is to kill them? Who thinks that killing a mother is the appropriate thing, the appropriate response to a thoughtful statement? Well, that leads us back to Pakistan and honor killings. Honor killings. The women's rights activists complain that in these patriarchal societies that it is regularly, on a regular occurrence, where men bully and threaten female victims. When it comes to the crime, we have a natural reaction of shock and horror, but when we see the justice system at work, our heart breaks, said the legal advisor. Well, the justice system is based on Muhammad's life. He was a liar, he was a thief, he was a kidnapper, he was a mass murderer. His life example is to just go ahead and kill those who you do not like, who you view as a threat. According to human rights lawyer Zia Ahmed Awan, victims' family in Pakistan are also at a disadvantage because honor killings often take place in male-dominated communities where women are often viewed as property with few rights to defend themselves and have little access to legal aid. Of course, Muhammad made it that way. It was Muhammad's stated purpose to subjugate women, to hide them in tents when they went outside, to control every aspect of their lives, to have his God say that women were essentially worthless and that men could have total dominance over them. The reason that they are treated so poorly in an Islamic country is because of Islam, period. In parts of the country, this is a quote, there is hardly any legal help for women. It's because Sharia law serves men against women. This crime is growing because the courts and laws are not responding to the cries for help. No, because those courts are based on Islam. Why is it that we can't understand the connection between the motivation and the crime? I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free...